thought leader and influencer. This is Luba Mayegiso and the Africa Report.
Luba Mayegiso, a very good morning. Sorry to keep you waiting. How are you?
Very well, Howard. Enjoying the holiday, guys?
Yeah, holiday. Who's on
holidays? Family's away.
Not in Joburg. Well, not yet, I don't think. Our school certainly aren't on holiday. I think our kids are writing exams. Talk about pressure. Yeah, so we've just been having a very heavy conversation, Luba. We've been talking about the increase in teenage suicides and how to recognize it, what are the factors, and what to do about it.
Yeah.
Not easy at all. We also live, and part of the things that we were saying, and that leads on to that conversation, is we're living in a very fractured environment, where the sense of belonging is very important, and we all, you know, we're divisive, we're writing things on social media about groups and who we are, the inside club and the outside club, racism, all sorts of things. How do we deal with that? How do we get to accept? And do you think we're ever going to get to accept that South Africans are genuinely all sorts of color, shapes, sizes, religions, etc.? What's your thoughts on this?
Howard, I think it's a difficult one because on one hand, we strive for it. I think we want it very desperately. But then on the other hand, I think we're making an extremely poor job at it. I think my comment has always been that we talk of social cohesion, but the question is, who owns it? Is it sitting in some government ministry to try and get us into shape, or is it something that we do ourselves? And I think left to ourselves, it's become very difficult. You know, I listened to the audio clip that was sent to you by one of your callers, and the struggle that I've had is that I think in our history in South Africa, defining people in terms of race, skin color, has been a preoccupation from literally day one. And it's been very difficult for us to move away from it, because I mean, if you go back in history, you have the Dutch, the French, and the English, and then on the one side, and then you have the natives on the other side. And very often, the other group didn't really name itself that, but they were named by the stronger group. And that's largely continued. So we've gone from, let's say, I mean, settlers didn't call themselves settlers. They were either Dutch, they were English, and they were natives. We had European, non-European. We had white, black. We had Bantu. We had African. So we've gone through a whole range of things. I mean, just before the show, I was looking at my dad's official documents, his Donbass and all of those things. And I was quite intrigued. I mean, it just simply gives his name and it says Group Tosa, Tribe Tosa. You know, it doesn't tell you anything. So we'd even go so far as to classify people according to the tribal affiliation that we saw them belonging to. And I think the challenge for us came around about 94, because up until 94, there weren't many people, and I have to be candid, on the white community, people weren't bickering and complaining about how they were defined. Yes, they were white. You know, some of them clung to a European ancestry, and we'd been Bantu, we'd been African, we'd been all manner of things. And then suddenly, come 94, everybody suddenly says we're all African. And I think you've got to also understand that from the black community, you sit there and you say, oh, really? You've never wanted to associate with being African.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you want to embrace this only term that I've got and you want to make it yours. So part of it is that struggle of saying, so when did you suddenly think you're African? You know, so I put this question to a few of my friends, and generally people come back to the issue that it's not just even your pigment or lack of it and how you look, but it's your behavior that's often more important. You know, you want to be South African, but do you behave like a South African? Do you see yourself as a South African? And so what many people will say in the black community is that as long as you cling to a motherland in Europe or somewhere else, then do I really view you as a South African? Because if you've got the split allegiance, and you're saying you're South African, but you still identify yourself as coming from somewhere else. You know, not too far ago, I think it was in 2004, I found myself sitting in a church with a group of men. They were all colored. And when we had to introduce ourselves, none of them identified their ancestry South African. All of them, you know, went back to Scotland or Holland or somewhere else. And I was amazed. And I said, guys, you were born in this country. Your parents were born here. Your grandparents were born here. At what stage do you identify as South African? And so it's a difficult one. In the white community, in the colored community, and in the black community, it stirs up a lot of resentment. You know, one young chap who's in his probably 28 said to me, Luba, We've accepted that it was is South African, but why is it that when we touch on certain issues that we then get into a fight? You know, you've got to embrace being South African, and you have to understand that we should be able to talk about the issues that make people uncomfortable, land, employment, economy. So I think when you start talking of those issues, then our being South African falls apart. And here's my question. If you go to America, do people get split into racial groups, into tribal groups? No, we don't. So it's difficult for us to have, you know, this sense of unity when we're so determined to split people and put them into pigeonholes that you're Jewish, you are Xhosa, you are Zulu, you are Chinese. And I mean, that's our preoccupation. So if we do everything to split people and keep them in separate camps, where does unity come in? You know, you go to America and people say, I'm American. You go to the UK and people say, I'm British. Nobody kind of sits and says, but yes, you're British, but where did your ancestors come from? Do they come from Germany? They come from Scotland? Do they come
absolutely.
From the Caribbean?
Nobody cares. Nobody cares at some point. You know, whether you are, you know, it's just not, it's not an issue, but here we are clinging to it. And unfortunately, you know, I wrote an article yesterday and I think that it serves our politicians to cling to it. You know, if you look at on a personal level, on an interpersonal level, South Africans absolutely are warm, loving, adoring people who go to the ends of the earth to help each other. You just see the most magnificent things happening even on social media, person to person. But when politicians get involved and they are agenda driven and are able to divide, what happens, what follows there is this terrible divisive conversation. And you go back to the Zinzi Mandela one, for example, and ultimately what happens is there's carnage on social media, and she sits back and says, but I was just having a debate about land reformation. Rubbish. It's not true. It's dishonest to say that. And we see it with Malema. We see it with, I'm even classifying a guy like Steve Hofmeyr because he is a well-known person with a very large following. These people are responsible. And until we recognize that we are being played for somebody else's agenda, I don't think we'll ever get it right.
Here's my question, Howard. Maybe David can help us. Can politicians stir up a pot and play people like you're saying, if those people themselves are not unsettled? I honestly believe that as much as we can say the politicians are doing it,
yes,
we ourselves
of course
are not comfortable with where we are.
Yes.
So we need very little to get us there. So here's the issue. We either say they must grow up and stop rattling the cage, or we need to get to a state where we are comfortable that when somebody does rattle the cage, we don't fall for that. But the thing is, I don't believe that as a nation. I think we want to believe that we've got to a certain stage, that we've got a certain level of maturity where we accept each other. But I don't think we're there.
I'm going to interrupt you. We might never be there. And there might be certain things that, you know, I can write an article and stir up emotion. Even if somebody is fairly comfortable with something, whatever the subject is, it doesn't really be on this. If I'm manipulative enough, if I am, provocative enough, I will stir up emotions on an issue that might now become an issue, even if somebody else is fairly settled around that. I think that there is a level of, and we can't pretend that the race thing and the racial nature of our history is something that has been settled. It hasn't, because there are big issues that still need to be discussed. But you can evoke all sorts of horror and emotional carnage if you do it in one way, and you can evoke a productive, respectful conversation if you do it in another way. And I'm saying that it's time for citizens of the country to wake up and say, hold on a minute, you know, we need to push back on this because we are being emotionally wound up for somebody else's political agenda, or because somebody else is drunk.
Okay, but then here's a counter. We had the TRC, Archbishop Tutu got up, and we had the whole Snot and Trana issue, and we became a rainbow nation. We had the whole Madiba drive, and we were a rainbow nation. We had 95 with the World Cup, and people were holding hands. Thabo Mbeki got up, and he gave his African speech. But at the end of the day, was that true, or was that a veneer that hid an ugly scar that we'd never discussed? Because when politicians took the lead, And I will concede and say, look, what we're seeing now at the highest level in some parties is not helpful. But I'm saying now, let's go back to a time when we had Mandela, we had Mbeki, we had the Archbishop Tutu, where people were doing their best to reconcile and say, we're a nation, we're united, we're uniting behind the Springboks. The challenge is, as wonderful as that moment was, it still didn't deal with the issue, and it still didn't necessarily change a fair number of people's minds. Because for me, if I look at, let's say, for instance, racism, I would say it's not even, I'm less worried about the Steve Hoffmeyers who make crazy rants. I'm still worried about the person that I encounter at the grocery store who looks at me as if I'm a thief when I stand behind them at the queue, and the lady who catches their purse. And so for me, it's much more pervasive. It's in the ordinary person. Yes, there are wonderful rays of sunshine and hope where I see people who look at you for who you are, but I would not agree and say that the average person out there is at that stage where they've made a conscious decision. People are still clinging on both sides. People are still clinging to the past, quite desperately so. And so hence I'm saying the politicians play one part, but I think we desperately want to believe that we have advanced farther down the line than we actually have. And I don't think we've got there, because every time this issue comes up, emotions get stirred and we scream and shout and then retreat, but we never put the issue on the table and say, well, you know what? Let's deal with this thing once and for all. I go to churches. People don't even want to touch this thing in churches, because as South Africans, we have this crazy belief that if we kind of have a sit-down chat for 5 minutes and cry and I say, I'm sorry for what I did, and you say you're sorry, then the world was perfect and we move on. But my behavior has not changed. What I think about you for that moment may have changed, but when I go back home, my deep down, my thoughts have not changed about white people or about black people. Now, I don't know what the solution is, but all I'm just saying is that I still see in the everyday person lots of those issues and manifestations that we haven't really moved very far. We believe that we've kind of jumped a major step forward, but we're actually realizing that we're still crawling and back there. Luke, I don't know what David feels about
David,
it, but it's
final
a tragedy.
Word, we do need to go to traffic and to music. But what do you think?
Yeah, from a psychological point of view, I think we all are. You know, we talk about this inner child. You know, we all carry these vulnerabilities and these fears and concerns. We're all looking for, having our emotional needs met, as I say. And I think for me, when people do speak about, very inflammatory things, sometimes it reaches those very vulnerable thoughts and feelings and then evokes those, and we don't kind of censor it. We go, oh, right, this is something that I've always feared innately, but haven't had an opportunity to really speak about. And I think it leads to people becoming more radical. And it does lead to, in a way, giving people, a permission in some ways to talk about things that they do fear, but normally would have been mediated and spoken about in a
more
rational way.
In a more constructive way,
rather in such an inflammatory way.
Guys, I do need to call it here. It is 8:55. Luba Mayekisa, thank you as always for a robust, honest, open, and I think very productive conversation. Let's take a final look at what's happening on our highways and byways.